Welcome to Brave Together podcast here on UK Health Radio, an empowering resource for the parents of children with disabilities, neurodivergence, and all unique needs.
I guess I thought that other people were going to understand if I said, hey, this is what's going on, then they were going to understand and give me more space and more grace. But the truth is that I don't think people truly understand or can truly understand until you live this life. You don't really understand what it really looks like or what it entails, right? So though people may be well-meaning, they really don't understand your capacity. And so they may still put the same expectations on you or ask you to do the same obligations or commitments. And so it really is on us to say, I can't, or to be the ones that, you know, put those boundaries around it and force those boundaries, because people just aren't going to do this for us, unfortunately. We have to do it for ourselves.
Hello, brave friends. Welcome to episode 263 of Brave Together podcast. I'm Jessica Pate, founder of the nonprofit We Are Brave Together, and a caregiving mom to my son, Ryan, who is now 23 and he has Prader-Willi syndrome, a rare genetic disorder. Joining me for today's conversation is my wonderful co-host, Susanna Peace Lavelle, author, life coach, advocate for disability families, and fellow brave mom. Today, we have a story episode where we hear a true story from a moment in the life of a caregiving parent, and then go deeper into that experience together. Our guest today is Nikki McIntosh, a rare disease mom, advocate, author, and founder of Rare Mamas. Nikki is mom to Miles, who has spinal muscular atrophy, or SMA. Her journey from searching for answers about her son's health to becoming a fierce advocate for him ultimately led her to build a community supporting other rare disease families. Today, Nikki shares the realities of that journey, pushing for answers when something doesn't feel right, navigating life as a caregiver, learning to protect her own energy, and discovering that self-care isn't something caregivers have to earn. It can be a non-negotiable. We also talk about turning pain into purpose, the creation of Rare Mamas, Nikki's journey to becoming an author, and what it means for her to intentionally chase peace in this next season of her life. Nikki's story is one of persistence, advocacy, community, and finding ways to use what we've lived through to serve others. Before we begin, make sure you're following We Are Brave Together on social media and subscribe to our YouTube channel for full episodes and for more from our community. If Brave Together podcast has supported you, please rate and review the show and share this episode with a friend who might need to hear it. Every share helps us reach another caregiving mom and remind her that she is not alone. And now, please enjoy our story episode with Nikki McIntosh.
When my younger son Miles was diagnosed with a rare disease, my older son Mason was in preschool. I remember finally gathering some of my wits about me to share with Mason's teacher what we'd learned about Miles' diagnosis and what we'd be facing. I wanted her to understand what was going on in our home, so she could keep an eye out on any ways this was affecting Mason. I felt like if I shared with her the depths of what was going on, she might be understanding if family members were helping get Mason to and from school while we were at appointments for Miles, or if we had to miss certain events, or if I forgot simple things like signing this or that form. I guess I just wanted to make sure if it looked like we were losing our minds, she'd know the reason why. Do you know the first question she asked me after she offered her condolences and prayers? She asked me if I wanted to be the room mom. In that moment, I remember thinking, huh? I'm trying to tell you that I was just delivered the worst news of my life, that I'm grieving, that I'm coming undone, that I'm up in arms, worried about how this will also affect Mason. This is my SOS signal. How, of all things, could you ask me to take on another responsibility? How do I even look like someone fit to be a room mom? So, of course, do you know what I said? I said, sure, I'd love to. Rookie move. Clearly, I had not learned to say no at that point. I mean, I wasn't lying. I would have loved to. But seriously, what was I thinking? I wasn't thinking. I was pleasing. I wanted her to like me. I didn't want to miss out on things like this for Mason because of Miles's diagnosis, which was already stealing too much. And let's be honest, I was flattered that she thought of me as someone she'd like to have as her room mom. But there couldn't have been a more wrong time for me to take on that role. So there I was, sending out emails about class parties and events and reminding parents to bring their children's school supplies while I could barely remember my own name. I think somehow I managed to pull it off in a way that was not all that terrible, but it came at a cost, and that cost was to me and my own care. Nothing like a 10-month commitment to teach me this lesson. Sacrificing my own care so I could still keep up with all of life's demands in addition to all of the rare disease demands was my solution. I was determined not to let this disease change me. I didn't want it to change my self-identity. So I was trying to keep up with everything as I always had. I was trying to be a good mom, a good wife, a good friend, a good daughter, trying to do everything for everyone all the time as best I could. But it wasn't working well for anyone, including me. This is tough. We've spent our whole lives building our identities. Taking on the identity of a rare disease mom was something I didn't see coming. But I've learned that this doesn't mean I have to change who I am altogether. It just means I may have to do things in a different way. There's a big difference between letting a diagnosis change your core values and letting it change the way you logistically operate in the face of limited time. But I couldn't see that then. I now understand that as caregivers, we must find solutions that don't involve sacrificing our own well-being. We have to get intentional about where we put our time and finite energy. We need outlets that are going to charge, uplift, and encourage us. We need conduits to relaxation, restoration, and recuperation. And we all need some places just to have some fun. We have to set our own boundaries around our time and be the ones to enforce them. No one's going to do this for us. I am in charge of prioritizing and upholding my own well-being. And it's truly one of the most important things I could pass along from the list of things I wish I'd done differently. It's never too late, and I'm starting now.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Nikki. So happy to have you with us today. Hi, Jessica. Good to see you.
Hi, Susanna. Nikki, I'm so glad to see you because even though we don't live that far apart, it's been a few years since we were at the Global Genes Conference and we got to sit on a panel together. So good to be with you.
So good to be with you too. I was so looking forward to seeing you again.
Well, we are so grateful that you were able to write a story, you wrote a book. So we're going to talk about that too. I'm so excited that our listeners get to hear from you. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about your story as a mama and, you know, the founder of Rare Mamas and also your new book. If you could just start from the beginning.
My story started back in 2010. I had my first son, Mason, who's now 16. And my younger son, Miles, is 14, born in 2012. My husband and I have been together for 20 years. I'm a Chicago native, but now I live in Southern California, raising these boys in Southern California. And when my second son was about 18 months old, he was diagnosed with a rare neuromuscular disease called spinal muscular atrophy, or SMA for short. SMA causes muscle weakness and robs people of their ability to eat, walk, even breathe. At the time of his diagnosis, it was the number one cause of genetic death in infants. So it pretty much rocked our world. It has been a crazy ride. There are now approved treatments on the market for his disease, and he actually participated in a clinical trial for the first ever approved treatment for his disease. So we have been on a wild ride. All ups and downs, and just going through our journey, I learned so much over the last decade, and I really wanted to share what I learned with other moms. I realized the glaring gaps of information for patients who have a rare disease, for parents navigating a rare disease with their child. And so I started sharing what I learned with other moms in our community, like we all do, and found out that, you know, other moms or other parents are often the best sources of information, and started writing down everything I wished I'd known when Miles was newly diagnosed. And that turned into a resource for other moms called Rare Mamas, and now a book also called Rare Mamas. And it has been just really such a beautiful and meaningful part of my personal story. It allows me to connect with other amazing parents and people like you. And so, yeah, that's my story.
I know that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about you and your thoughts and your wisdom and your advice and your writing. I would love to hear just a little bit more about Miles. What is something that he loves? What is something that you see in him that lights you up, Nikki?
I love his personality. He is so feisty. You know, he looks like this little boy, and he is, but he is a feisty soul, really tenacious. I think what I love about him most is he doesn't accept no for an answer. He always keeps trying, though he has so many challenges, and his disease, you know, changes his ability to do things. He will try again. He will try something that he wasn't previously able to do again. And sometimes he finds new ways. And so he's always adapting. And I see he has such a sense of self. And that makes me so happy, because I think one of the things I worried about most when he was diagnosed was how it was going to affect his self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And what I see in him is that he knows who he is, and he's confident in himself. And that is such a beautiful gift. And so I'm learning from him. You know, he's surprising me and all the time in new ways. And we butt heads a lot because we're similar in a lot of ways. And he's a teenager now, so he's giving me a run for my money. But yeah, he's a cool kid. So he's constantly keeping me on my toes.
What does your caretaking life look like, kind of like on a daily basis, if you were to bring us into a day in your life?
So Miles navigates life from a wheelchair. And so there's a lot of just helping him with, you know, maybe it's transfers, or maybe it's loading him in and out of the car. He attends a typical school and a typical classroom, but it's constantly just adapting all the normal things to allow for him to navigate them from a wheelchair, finding new ways, workarounds. And so there's not a lot of downtime like for most of us caregivers, constantly on. There's also hypervigilance that doesn't seem to go away, because even though he's doing quite well with what he has, there's still so much involved in his physical care, and there's changes as he grows and his body changes, and there's constant evolution of his disease. It looks like you know, being on pretty much all the time, as mm-hmm. most of us are.
Yes, we understand. We are going to take a brief break. Stay with us.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth,
There are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, brave friends.
Were you told anything at his birth? Was it just sort of like one day you realize something was different and the next day you find out it's SMA? Like, can you tell us about all of the ups and downs? And because sometimes it's just not a linear process, right? You know, even finding community for something that's so quote, quote, rare, right? If you can share with us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Miles hit all of his milestones until it came time to stand and walk. He was developing pretty typically into that point, and we noticed that he wouldn't pull up to stand to take those precursors to walking, cruising furniture and things of that nature. We knew what those milestones were because we had an older son. And so we noticed when they weren't occurring for Miles. And so we started asking our pediatrician at the time, you know, why is he not pulling to stand? And sadly, we were dismissed, really. Those concerns were dismissed over and over. Until we said, you know, we really feel like there's something going on. We want to start testing. So we did some initial tests, like looking for hip dysplasia, some simple things of that nature, looking for a cord. And when those came back negative, we were told to go do some physical therapy. At the time, we started doing the physical therapy, and I just wasn't seeing any kind of gains, any progress whatsoever. And there were also some inexplicable things, some hand tremors and some things that are actually quite typical for children with his disease, but that nobody could explain. So there came a point I said, I just want to go see a neurologist. I think we need to figure this out. And again, was told there's no need, but we decided to, first it was time to find a new pediatrician, and two, we were going to go see a neurologist. So we had to we just called in like everybody we knew to get us an appointment because these appointments were so hard to come by, right? To see a specialist. And fortunately, we were able to get in to see a really top neurologist in the area. And she said within the first 20 minutes of seeing Miles, yes, there's definitely something going on. It's good that you brought him. We're going to start down the road of testing and we're going to figure this out. So it took about 6 months of testing to get to that rare diagnosis, which at the time felt like a lifetime. But now I have the knowledge to know that was actually fairly quick in terms of diagnosing a rare disease, because it could take 5 to 7 years and often a lot of misdiagnoses. So, you know, at that time we were just, that was a terrible time. That was so hard, feeling like there was something going on, going, you know, test after test. And just so much uncertainty, so much fear, and feeling like in our guts they were going to find something, hoping it was something fixable, easily fixable. I was kind of hoping for that tethered cord, to be honest, because you know, in the bigger scheme of things, there was a solution for that. And when we got to the point where that diagnosis came, the words that I was told at the time was, no treatment, no cure, progression inevitable. It felt like the word, you know, the number one cause of genetic infant death. And it felt like the worst thing we could hear. So our world, you know, went upside down. If we found out it was genetic, you know, no one in our family had ever had it, ever heard of it. We had an older son. He was not affected. We found out later he's not even a carrier. Here is Miles, who, you know, if you look at him, everything seems fine, except that he can't pull the stand, but he's diagnosed with, you know, a really, really severe rare disease. So it was a journey to get to that diagnosis. And then once we had that answer that we were searching for, it was an answer we didn't want.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Right.
Yes. What advice or encouragement would you give parents who are in that diagnostic odyssey, waiting, searching, seeking answers.
I would say don't stop. Don't stop. Don't give up. You know, you're going to be told a lot of things along the way, even by your friends and family. You know, well-meaning people around you might even say things like, I'm sure it's fine, he'll get there or she'll get there. It's, you know, if you feel like there is something going on, listen to that. You know, you're your child's voice, your child's advocate from day one. It really is on you. I think, you know, before we enter these worlds, we think, you know, the medical professionals are the experts and they're going to guide us through this to get an answer. And unfortunately, that's not always the case. It's often we find out that it really is our place as parents to be the ones pushing for those answers. And so I say, keep pushing, because those answers are going to give you, they're going to give you a lot of things that you need to have, you know, access to a community. They're going to give you that diagnosis that is going to allow you to get services and programs that you need. Keep pushing. Your family's going to benefit, you know, by you not giving up until you get an answer.
Yes. You are the expert on your child.
Mm-hmm. Right. And like you mentioned, their voice for sometimes seemingly forever. I mean, I have a daughter who's almost 20 and I'm like, I'm still your voice, right?
Yes.
There are different needs now. And it is a constant vigilance, right? Constant advocacy, constant being on.
It is, because no one's going to chase down, you know, an answer or push for it like a parent, right? Who's on a mission to help their kid. We're the ones, you know, we're the ones that are going to get it done.
And we do.
And we do. That's right.
Get it done. We do. Nikki, switching to the story that you submitted, and I was right there with you. I know, like Susanna said as well, and you're talking to Mason's teacher. How old was Mason, or what grade was this at the time?
This was preschool. So preschool. He was 3-4 years old.
Okay. So not only are you in the like tiny stage, the littles stage, which is so hard. She had the audacity to ask you to be room mom, but you just told her what you're dealing with. And she's like, oh, okay. Well, you're must be quite capable. So would you like to be room mom? I mean, I wanted to say, what the hell?
Exactly. Exactly.
But also so relatable, because yes. Nikki was like, sure. I'd love to do it.
Right. It's so funny because there I was trying to tell her, if we looked like uninvolved parents, right, of this little, you know, preschooler, it wasn't because we weren't wanting to be involved parents, it's because we were going through like the worst phase of our life, right? So if other people were bringing our kid to school and, you know, helping him while we're navigating and all these appointments and therapies, you know, that's what's going on. So I was trying to say, listen, I may not be involved. And she kind of went, let me get you more involved. Let me ask you to be more involved.
Reel you in.
Right.
I would say, looking back on that, you know, all of us, I think, as women, as caregivers, we can fall into the trap of people pleasing, right? And I'm making a hasty generalization.
Oh, you're right on for me.
Talk to enough mothers and women that I know it almost feels like it's just in us from the get-go, in our DNA, to people please. And there was probably a little of that playing into it, I'm guessing.
Yes. I mean, if I'm being honest, like that, you know, part of my, I think, personality, identity is that I like to help. I want to be involved. Yeah. I wanted to be involved. That was my first, Mason's my older son. He's my first experience into school and all these things. I dreamed about, you know, being involved in his classroom and, you know, what that phase of life would look like. So it really tapped into something deep within me when she asked me to be there, because that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted for myself. That's what I wanted for my son. And so when she asked me, it was one, I wanted to please her because, listen, I wanted her to be nice to my kid. That's one of the things, right? Let's be honest, like, right? Be my kid nice, sure. What do I need to do to help so you know, take care of my son? And then two, I, you know, have a heart that loves to serve. And so that felt like a way to serve. Yes, I wanted to be there. It killed me to have to say no. And it also tapped into that, like, this diagnosis, it's, you know, it's already robbing me of so much. And now poor Mason, now I'm gonna have to say no to something that I want to do for him and that I know would benefit for him by me being around, being involved. And so I said yes. And it was, you know, to my own detriment, because there I was in the most busy time of my life, you know, sending out emails to parents and, you know, worrying about things that I had no capacity for at the time. Right. So it was a big learning curve. Obviously, everything was so new at that point. I didn't realize how little capacity I would have physically and emotionally, mentally, all of it at that point. And I didn't know how to say no, frankly. I didn't know how to say no at that point. You know, now I know that I could have said, you know what, I can't take on the room mom role, but I'd love to be involved in other ways. So every once in a while when I'm able, I'll help you out here and there. But the room mom role is not for me right now. I didn't know how to say that then.
Mm-hmm. This is so good for our audience to hear, because I think we can get into cycles of saying yes, for lots of reasons, right? It's like, yes, I want to be the mom that shows up for my neurotypical kid, you know, and this can happen in, you know, special day classes as well. But like, we want to be there. Yes. We want to have a good relationship with the teacher. We want to serve, and we don't like saying no. And we don't really stop and pause like we should. I hate saying the word should, but like, we are allowed to do and evaluate our capacity. I love how you use the word capacity, Nikki. And I think we deserve, and we have to remind ourselves where we're at, what we can do, what we can't do. And is it a should, or is it, oh, this lights me up and I'm going to figure out a way to make space for this in my life? Whatever it is.
Yes. I love that you said that. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think I've learned over time that it needs to be something, like you said, that lights us up. It needs to be something that fuels us, that charges us or restores us, because we just don't have space in our lives for more obligations or more commitments that don't. And we really have to be the ones that put the boundaries around that.
Yeah.
No one is going to do that for us. That was another thing I had to learn. I guess I thought that other people were going to understand if I said, hey, this is what's going on. Then they were going to understand and give me more space and more grace. But the truth is that I don't think people truly understand or can truly understand. Until you live this life, you don't really understand what it really looks like or what it entails, right? So though people may be well-meaning, they really don't understand your capacity. And so they may still put the same expectations on you or ask you to do the same obligations or commitments. And so it really is on us to say, I can't, or to be the ones that, you know, put those boundaries around it and force those boundaries, because people just aren't going to do this for us. Unfortunately, we have to do it for ourselves.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. I mean, we need to say this. We need to wake up every morning and say this to ourselves every day. Maybe it's like, maybe we can distract Nikki by giving her more things to do, and that's going to be helpful for her. You know, I mean, I've heard that too. Susanna, don't you want to focus on something else? Yeah, but I can't, because I'm dying on the vine right now. And I'm about to pass out from exhaustion, overwhelm, fill in the blank, a heart attack. I don't know, you know.
Yes.
Whatever's happening today, like, I just feel like, are we mostly running on fumes? I don't want to.
Right. It's not a choice, but it is the reality of our lives, unfortunately. You know, we even can downplay some of those realities because, you know, sometimes we just don't want to bring down the room, right? We don't want to.
Totally.
It has to always be about that. So sometimes we even downplay it just because we don't feel like, you know, exerting the emotion of talking about it.
Stay with us, Bravies. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. finished? What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Brave Together podcast. Nikki, you know, through our podcast and through We Are Brave Together, you know, Susanna and I and others and leaders and other speakers and retreat speakers, you know, we're giving moms permission to take care of their mental health.
Yes.
So what would you say about that? Like, I know you are exhausted and I know that you're burnt and I know that you feel like you have no time to invest in your own mental health. And, you know, what would you say, Nikki?
Well, I've learned to be very tactical in it. So what that looks like for me, because I have all those great intentions and I know that I need it, but what I've figured out is that I have to be really, really strategic and tactical about making it happen. And so what that looks like is, for example, if my son has a big appointment, and I'm planning that, right, a couple months in advance, then I'm going to make sure the next day I don't put anything on my calendar if I can, right? Not always possible, but I am going to try. And that's what I mean by looking ahead and saying, like, that is going to be a big day. It's going to be emotionally exhausting. By the time I get home that night, I'm going to be cooked. And if I have to wake up the next day and go full throttle again and do X, Y, and Z, there is no recovery then. There is no recuperation from that big appointment. And that's where I feel like the burnout comes, is if you just have to go right back into something big. You know, no additional things. Don't put another appointment there if I can. Don't put like an IEP meeting there if I can. You know what I mean? Like nothing right. else that's going to require the big exertion of energy. And so what I've learned over time is that it actually is really, you got to get really tactical with it. Otherwise, it's just these great ideas and great intentions that are not carried out.
I love how intentional you are. And yes. I love the words that you use, strategic and tactical. And so anyone who's listening, yes, you have permission to clear out your next day after that big appointment. Because again, I think it's so easy to just be on autopilot and warrior mode and vigilance mode and just fill our days because we think we're supposed to, or we have to, or we're not allowed to clear a day, clear a morning, clear an afternoon, yeah. clear a night so that we can just recover from such a big appointment or a big day or a big meeting.
Yes. Or we're going to just, you know, that we're going to disappoint somebody else or, you know, not meet expectations that someone else has placed on us. And, you know, the reality is that we really only have so much bandwidth. That's it. Mm-hmm. And so it will come out somewhere. It's either going to, you know, right. So it's, you know, either we're not going to have the capacity to take care of our kid who needs us, or we are going to just drain ourselves until what, we're sick or we're, you know, injured. It's critical. It's really critical to say, no matter the expectations, you know, of the outside world, that's okay. This is what I'm going to need. I deserve it. I, you know, I have permission, like you said, to allow myself that space. I think we have to just, you know, we're shifting our mindsets to not thinking it's selfish, but that it's required. It's critical.
Yeah. And I would actually even offer the word that I use for myself, because I'm still learning. It's taken me a very, very long time to even just dip my toe into the unselfishness of self-care for me. But I like to use the phrase like non-negotiable. Like I really love words, and I really love, this might be a beautiful segue into talking about your amazing book that you published, because to me, I had such a strong response to even just every title of every chapter and section. It was very, very much like, here is a blueprint, right? And I'm going to take you through this journey. It was like a system almost, you know? And I just respond very well to like spreadsheets and numbers and things that can have a solve, even though we're not trying to solve anything. I am your perfect audience in that this is an ongoing journey. I don't know what the next chapter is going to be, but in the meantime, can I have some support along the way? And that feels so less isolating. You are here for so many amazing reasons on this earth as a human being, Nikki, to share what it is that you probably wanted the most when you were going through this in the beginning.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I had to learn all those systems and supports, you know, what it felt like the hard way. It felt like I bumped up against every obstacle there was. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what it felt like at the time. And I had to figure it all out. And I just wanted it to be so much easier for the next person. There's no reason for all of us to reinvent the wheel. So many of us have figured it out. And we do. We figure it out, right? That's what you do as a parent. You will chase down anything. You'll figure it out for your kid. But it takes time. And so I just wanted it to be easier and take less time, because I know how much energy we exert doing it and how little that leaves for ourselves. And so this book felt like my way of just making it easier for the next mom.
Yeah. How did you just actually do it, right? Everyone wants to write a book, but how did you do it? How did you push yourself to do it? Because there is no time, and there's never a good time, and there's never 6 months where there's not a lot going on where, oh, this is my time to write. So how did you do it for anyone who's listening, who's working on a book, who wants to write a book, who's afraid just to carve out that time that it takes to write a book? How did you do it, Nikki?
At the beginning, I didn't know it was going to be a book, to be honest. So I just started writing down everything I wished I'd known so that I could pass it along to the moms that I was meeting in, you know, at the physical therapy office, in our community, at the doctor's offices. It would take me, 3 years to figure something out. And then I'd be like, oh, I figured it out. I wanted to pass this information on. And so I kind of started sharing. And then at some point I realized, I think this is a book. And, if I'm being really honest, I really did feel a calling to do it. Really scary to follow it. But it's so strange. I'm not a really mushy person. Like, I don't know. I don't cry over puppies and babies and things. That's just not who I am. But when I think of another rare mom, like that just like, I could cry right now. It just hurts my soul. And so I feel like that's how I knew this was something that was meant for me. And so I then once I realized, okay, I'm gonna really try and do something with this, it became such a passion. It would wake me up in the morning. Like, I would literally get up 2 hours before my kids to write, because that was the only time I had when the house was quiet and I could just hear myself think. I really felt like my faith plays a big part in my life. I feel like I heard God's voice in those early morning hours. And that was when I was most creative. And then it just kind of started pouring out. What I didn't expect is that I really enjoyed the writing process. I never, before this, I didn't have an idea. I never wanted to be an author. There was a lot of things I wanted to do with my life, but that was never like on my bucket list or something like that. An author. There was a lot of other stuff. There still is. So that it surprised me that I actually really enjoyed the writing process itself. And I think it was because it was that time to process all of it. It was a time to feel like maybe something good could come from all of this, right? Like maybe if I went through all of this and I bumped up against all those roadblocks that I talked about, and that, but then I figured out maybe at least, you know, something good can come from all that, that hard. Mm-hmm. So I would say for somebody else that is interested in writing, just to chip away at it, you know, little bit by little bit by little bit. If you think about the big thing, it's overwhelming. But if you chip away and find that time, whatever that looks like for you, and just do it little by little, and find the joy in it. And that will pull you through. If you find it, something that's therapeutic, then it will naturally, you'll naturally want to do it, right? And then you'll naturally make time to do it. And if you don't feel that way about it, maybe that's not the thing. I don't know, because I think we all need to find things that we are really enjoying. It was a beautiful gift.
I feel like also what I'm hearing you say is that it was also sort of a release of all of the, you know, you were talking about how when we're going and going and going and going and going, and there's no time to decompress and there's no time to have a pause or even take a breath, right? It's going to have to go somewhere. And so I feel like the release, the catharsis of writing, and especially silence. I mean, silence for us mamas, I don't know about you two, but I mean, my kid makes a lot of noise. Okay. And so I'm like, how can one person, it's just me and her, by the way, I'm a single mama, me and her. I'm like, how can one person make so much noise? Like just noise, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just love this process, too, of just releasing and getting out the emotions and the big feelings. And I'm sure there was so much that you got out that actually didn't make it into the book, you know, cause you just had to like write out the kitchen sink. Yep. And then let me organize this so that it's a cohesive guidebook, for other mamas.
I think when you, you know, when you're a doer, when you're task oriented, when you're that type of person, sometimes you need a place to put all of that, that angst and that, you know, anxiousness and all the feelings, surrounding all of it. I think it is really smart for us to find places to do that, whatever it might look like for each of us. Just to put all that, because otherwise, we'll just spin ourselves silly, right? It's, we talk about, you know, when we were talking about giving ourselves permission for downtime, sometimes we get it and then we don't know what the heck to do with it, right? We don't even know how to be still. We're so used to just, you know, always being, you know, going. So I think for me, being still, I still needed something to do in that stillness, if that makes sense, right? So sometimes we have to find things like that that do give us that stillness, but allow our mind, give ourselves, our mind somewhere to be and to go. Right? So for me, it was that. And I think we all, you know, if we find those things, it really can help us.
Nikki, if somebody's listening and they're just, you know, inspired that you have harnessed your love, you know, into advocacy, into service, into writing, and they're thinking, okay, I want to do something with this. I want, you know, to make sense of this pain or turn this pain into purpose, or, you know, what has been so hard into something beautiful. And I have no idea what that is. What would you recommend this mom or dad do?
I would say, you know, there's so many places where we can advocate. There's so much need out there, right? When you are going through these different, when you're navigating the different systems, for example, or you are navigating the different parts of your child's disease and maybe how that affects them, you know, at school or in your community, or, you know, you're navigating a certain system, a program. If there's something there that you find that you feel like there's a gap or that isn't right, and it just kicks you right there, gets you, or it hits you in the heart, like that's it. That's yours. That's for you. Put your energy there, and you're going to find that it will fuel you. Another way is if you have certain gifts, you know, that are just your undeniable gifts, and there's a place that you can use them in, you know, within the world of disability or, you know, unique needs, disease, medical parenting, bring it there. It will help you feel like you're yourself. It will use those parts of your identity that you've always had that you feel like sometimes maybe slipping away because you're absorbed in this world now. Use them there, and you'll find yourself again. And you will find meaning in it, and you will find purpose in it. So I think just kind of be on the lookout for those places where you see, you know, that really irks me. That's not right. I want to change it. Go change it. Or, you know what, that's hitting me right in the heart and there's a need there and I feel like I could help. There you go. Or, you know, there's a need and you have that particular skill, that's yours. And it's going to be a beautiful gift if you can do that.
I love that. And you'll find yourself again. I love that, because we do get lost in this role as mothers, parents, caregivers. And we think that that's the only thing we're allowed to be, that there aren't other parts of ourselves to celebrate and express and utilize and enjoy. But we do get to enjoy all the parts of us and come back to ourselves. So I really love how you said that, Nikki. Where can everybody find you and find your book and all that you're up to?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Everything is at raremamas.com. And my book is called Rare Mamas, Empowering Strategies for Navigating Your Child's Rare Disease. And it's on all the online booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the places. And if you needed more information, you can go to raremamas.com.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Susanna, any final question?
Well, I just am wondering if, you know, if you're looking forward to this next season in your life, what is it that you are focusing on for yourself, Nikki?
Allowing myself to chase peace. You know, I think I have personally been on, you know, the mission to save my son, the mission to, you know, launch this book into the world. And I'm also understanding that peace is such a valuable thing. You know, when we were talking about the constant doing and productivity, and that all feels good. And that can help us, you know, put all those feelings somewhere and feel productive and feel like, but I think there's value to peace. And so in this next season, I hope that I can allow myself to chase peace and realize the value in that, the value in just being at peace in my heart. So I'll let you know if I get there.
Well, we want to hear about it. Maybe if you want to write about it for our blog, like just your journey of chasing peace, we welcome that, Nikki. We're always looking for writers, always.
Thank you. I would love that.
Great. Oh, it's so good to be with you. And we will plan our field trip.
Yes. I can't wait to see you all in person.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me on your show. It's such a gift to me to be in conversation with other parents like you. And I just am so grateful for Brave Together, and we are Brave Together. Everything you're doing to support caregivers, it's so needed. So thank you from one mom to another, two moms, one mom to two other moms. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today on UK Health Radio. Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms, offering support groups that are virtual and in person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats all over the United States. We've also published two books, our first anthology of caregiving stories entitled Becoming Brave Together, Heroic, Extraordinary Caregiving Stories from Mothers Hidden in Plain Sight, and our newest release, Suddenly Brave Together, Letters to Caregiving Moms at a Defining Moment in Their Lives. Both books offer stories of hope and transformation and encouragement and validation for every parent caregiver. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood awaits you.
Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast, links, show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns, because we are all beautifully complex,
and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.